electrons stay perfectly aligned in their charge states in those valence shells without exchanging. But what's actually happening is the charge is exchanging without electrons moving and jumping from one atom to the next. KC2, QIQ.
Okay, I've got another problem. I take a gram of copper. I put it in an ideal calorimeter. I measure the temperature. It has to be at 290 degrees Kelvin. My ideal calorimeter is an isothermal thing. Energy is not allowed to thermally flow in or out of my calorimeter. Also, my calorimeter is well shielded, so therefore the black body radiation of the copper can't take place. I'm now studying copper in its natural state, in isolation, in my calorimeter. I measure it at 290 degrees Kelvin today, and all those free electrons in the outer valence shell of all those copper molecules, I know they are moving. Obvious by the fact I can put a sensitive receiver on there and I can measure the radio noise. But right now I don't have that radio receiver connected. I've got them in the shielded calorimeter. And I wait a week. I started off with the copper at 290 Kelvin. A week later, it's at 290 Kelvin. If all of this hopping around is causing energy loss, but I measure the exact same amount of energy a week later, are we sure energy is being lost? KC2QIQ, K2RIW?
Absolutely, and you can calculate it at the atomic level from atom to atom. And just the mere fact that you're either maintaining something at a temperature, you know, in order to hold something there, there's energy being involved. It's just that that's a microsystem that you're looking at and saying, okay, you aren't exchanging the energy, but the energy is still coming from some outside source on top of that. So there is always energy involved. And when you're doing the counts at the atomic level, each electron is an energy carrier. And you can always tell what the level is by looking at each electron and counting them up. And as I said, as long as the electron count is always the same, no energy is lost. But once one has to move from one orbit over to the next orbit, there is an energy loss during that. But when you're transferring energy, the orbital passes only have to come near each other and to exchange charge. When charge moves, then charge is moving just because the electrons are coming close to each other. So that is definitely what's going on there. KC2, QIQ.
BDH with a comment.
It's Shannon waiting for the comment.
You said that the energy is coming from the outside. I say it's not, Glenn. If I've got a really good calorimeter, I have insulated my material being studied from the outside universe. It is thermally insulated. I've got real good insulation in my calorimeter, and it's well shielded, so black body radiation is not taking place. I measure the temperature of the copper. Today, it's 290. I come back a week later. I come back a year later. I come back 10 years later. It is isolated from the universe as far as black body radiation is concerned, and because I've got real good insulation, no thermal energy is flowing in or out. Only the electrons are hopping from copper molecule to molecule. There's a cloud of valence electrons doing all of this hopping that you say has an energy loss mechanism. How can there be an energy loss mechanism if I can measure the temperature a year later of that copper block? My 1 gram of copper has not changed. Are you sure the energy is being dissipated? How are you, Glenn?
Well, there's principles of thermal inertia here. I mean, either something is moving up, it's moving down, or to maintain, you know, of course there's energy being involved at a fixed temperature. The only way you're going to maintain a fixed temperature, it's like your house. You want to keep your house at 70 degrees, you set your thermometer, and then you have to, in order to maintain the temperature, you've got to apply some outside energy to do so. If you seal something in some kind of a structure, and there is in a thermal moment that was applied to it to raise to a temperature, and you don't allow any energy to move in and out, I would suggest the temperature is going to continue to rise to a point where something else will happen, or there's a leak in it somewhere and the temperature is going to go down. But I'm not sure that you can actually seal the way that you're saying and maintain an even temperature without it ever moving. KC2, QIQ.
The thermostat and the furnace in my house is continuously supplying energy in the wintertime because my house is not a calorimeter. It's continuously losing optical energy, thermal energy by conduction, convection, and radiation. My house is a, scientifically speaking, your house and my house are very lossy items. In a good laboratory, you and I can construct a good thermally isolated vacuum bottle-like thing, a thermos bottle-like thing. We can make an extremely good calorimeter. We can stop the outside universe from dumping any energy in, or we can stop any energy from within going to the outside. We can create good thermal isolation. A well-constructed calorimeter does do that. So the outside world is not supplying energy in this particular laboratory experiment. Now you're telling me because the electrons are hopping from one molecule to the next, energy is being lost. If I can't measure any change in energy by way of my thermometer, whether I wait an hour, a week, a year, or 10 years, are you saying I didn't wait long enough? I can't measure any thermal energy change. What's the mechanism of this energy loss if I can't measure it with this nearly ideal calorimeter? Over to you, Brian.
Well, if a body or a substance is in equilibrium, that means the temperature is neither going up nor down, and there's no more thermal inertia left, then at that point in time, I would suggest that there's no more electrons moving from one atom to the other. Now, could there be a... that's equilibrium, right? Now, I mean, there could be the spacing of the atoms that you can have between the clouds of the atoms themselves at a temperature. But at that point in time, to say that if you were in a true equilibrium, are there really electrons moving from one valence shell to the next? I don't think that can happen, Dick. KC2QIQ.
Dick, would it still have thermal noise?
Give that man a cigar. Now, while I've got this block of copper sitting in my ideal calorimeter, and my thermometer tells me nothing has changed, but I've got these two terminals on the side, and periodically, for brief periods of time, I connected it to my radiometer.
That's your energy leak.
No, I'm only for very brief periods of time connecting it to my radiometer. I will measure minus 114 dBm per megacycle of electron noise of the random motion of those valence electrons. I can do that measurement in the beginning, a year later, whenever. I will get the exact same number.
I agree.
That tells me that those electrons are moving from molecule to molecule. And if the
But if you weren't getting the radiation, the temperature would continue to rise.
Who is supplying the energy to make the temperature rise?
The energy loss of one electron moving from one valence shell to the next. That is a physical loss. And as I said, if nothing is, like you said, it's sealed like it is, then the only other way it could get out would be a form of radiation, and that would be the loss, preventing the temperature from going higher. KC2QIQ.
VDH with a comment.
VDH recognized. Please stand by a second. Glenn, you've used the word thermal inertia a number of times. Do you mean specific heat? Over to you, Glenn.
I'm just saying that if you take a body of copper and you elevate it to a temperature, in other words, you're putting energy into it, the copper is going to do one of two things. You either remove the body source and the temperature is coming down, or you're applying energy and it's going up. It's moving one direction or the other. Now, you've created a some kind of a shield around this copper where you're saying that the temperature is neither going up or down, but you still have these valence shells, exchanging electrons. And I'm saying, first of all, I'm having a very, very hard time with this concept, number one. And number two is I'm saying that if the temperature were to remain constant instead of either going up or down, that energy would have to go in one other place, which would have to be radiation. So it has to go somewhere. KC2QIQ.
If it is well shielded so that there is no T squared, T to the fourth power, radiation taking place, I've got a shielded chamber. And I've got it thermally insulated with very good insulation. So I'm not pouring heat in, and I'm not allowing heat to go out. I'm now measuring the natural characteristic of the copper molecules in isolation. Yes, when I connect my radiometer to that receiver and I measure minus 114 dBm per megacycle, I am creating a power drain when I do that. Therefore, I'm doing it for very brief periods of time, and I'm accounting for that energy loss. I make a measurement for a few milliseconds now, a few milliseconds a week later, a few milliseconds a year later. And my thermometer is telling me nothing is changing. If I thoroughly isolate that copper molecule, those copper molecules, I say they will stay at the same temperature. I say the random energy of those valence electrons is continuing to take place, because no matter when I connect my radiometer, I will see the minus 114 dBm per megacycle of noise, the random motion noise of those electrons. So I know that they're moving. They're moving from molecule to molecule. You're saying that when they move from molecule to molecule, energy must be lost or gained. How can energy be lost or gained without the temperature changing? I say the temperature will not change. Mr. VDH, I think you had a comment on this. Go ahead. Start off with your full call and your name, sir. K2LIW.
Okay, fine. This is Vic. Call is WA2VDH. Name is John. Very interesting conversation. As I understand it, when an electron gets raised from the valence band to the conduction band, it's going to emit energy. When it drops from the conduction band to the valence band, it's going to emit energy, and the other way, it's going to absorb energy. What we call temperature is the average motion over the entire piece. But if the piece is in isolation, if the hunk of copper is in isolation, then there might be microscopic or local changes in temperature, but on the average, the temperature would remain the same, because where energy is emitted from an electron falling in one area, it's going to be absorbed by an electron being raised up in another area. And so long as you don't make a noise measurement, the amount of power, KTB, is the amount of power in watts. So long as you don't make any measurement, I don't think you're taking any power out of it. Go ahead.
I agree with you, John, and I think you're saying something very similar to what I'm saying. And by the way, I could, in theory, measure the minus 114 dBm per megacycle, the KTB noise. I could do it with a kind of an electrometer. I could do it with instrumentation that measures the voltage across those terminals, but it's doing it with something that's got 10 to the 10 ohms of impedance. Therefore, the power drain of that voltage measurement could be made very small. So I think you're saying what I'm saying. Yes, when it hops from the outer shell up to a conduction band, yes, some energy has been given. And when it hops back down, some energy has been subtracted at the individual atom level. But if I now look at the conglomerate of these 10 to the 20 power total copper molecules in this Avogadro's number, copper, I think, has got an atomic weight of, what is it? Is it 8? No, that's oxygen. Which one is copper? Let's assume it's 10. So if I got 10 grams, which means I've got 1 mole gram of copper, I've got 10 grams of copper, I've got Avogadro's number of copper, 10 to the 23 power copper molecules, individual copper molecules from copper atoms are going up and down in energy as that electron leaves and comes back, but there's still this cloud of electrons moving around. In my ideal calorimeter, I think a year later it's going to be at the exact same temperature if I've done a good enough job of isolation. Therefore, in total, I think the hopping in and hopping out of those electrons are in the big picture, a lossless mechanism. There is no mechanism of loss there, is what I'm saying. And, John, I think you're saying that also. WA2VDH, K2LIW.
That's the way I see it. I guess if you wanted to, you could compare it to some other substance, say, that instead of giving off as heat, gave off that energy difference as light, where if you had it isolated, a light that would be emitted when an electron dropped back down to the valence band would be absorbed someplace else when an electron was raised up into the conduction band. So rather than coming off as heat in some other type of substance, that might come off or be absorbed as optical energy. But so long as it's in isolation, what we measure as temperature or whatever would have to be an average over the entire conglomeration. Back to you, Dick.
So as you can see, Glenn, what we're saying here now, I've got 1 gram molecular weight of copper. I've got that number of grams, which is the atomic number of the copper. And maybe it's a 14 grams, but copper is 14. The large number of molecules, some of them are giving up an electron at this instant and going to a slightly lower energy level. Some of them are absorbing an electron and going to a slightly higher energy level. But if I look at the 10 to the 23 power total copper molecules that's in this example, Avogadro's number, the average energy of all of them stays the same year after year. If I've got this whole calorimeter working correctly, where I have thermally isolated this 14 grams of copper, and I have shielded it so that no T to the fourth radiation can take place. It's not, I mean, everything is a kind of a black body radiator because it's at something above 0 degrees Kelvin. But I've properly shielded it. I've made the absorptivity, emissivity ratio. Have I made that unity or have I made that zero? I'm not sure which I've done, but I've properly shielded it. So as such, now there's zillions and zillions of these events of an electron leaving and coming back to the copper molecule. If I sum all of those events together, I think there is no composite energy loss or gain. I think that copper will stay at exactly the same temperature year after year in that well-insulated, well-shielded calorimeter. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
What about my comment?
Actually, Dick, I think that if you were able to create such a isolation the way that you did, such that no external energy could leave that substance, I would have to say that the temperature would continue to increase. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
John, do you agree with that? What's the mechanism of the increase? WH2VDH, K2RIW?
No, I don't agree with that. I don't see how, what mechanism would cause the temperature to change if it's in isolation in a calorimeter. Go ahead.
Wesley, N2XJN, do you think it's going to increase or decrease in temperature in this ideal calorimeter? You got it, Wes.
There is no clear answer to that. I'm trying to have a perfect timing with what you're talking about, and it looks like my comment is not going to be exactly in line, but first I would like to ask if I have permission to express that.
You asked for permission for something, and I didn't understand the question. Wes, go ahead.
John, can you say it in English?
He wants to change the subject.
It's not necessarily changing the subject. When you were talking, I was trying to make a comment. Right now, it looks like my comment is not going to be exactly in line. But what I'm saying is, can I express it now, or you want to stay on this?
I want to stay on this a little bit longer. Glenn, in order for that copper block, 14 grams of copper, I'm going to use as an example, because it has a very specific heat, which you and I can easily look up, I cannot change its temperature, measured with a thermometer, until I add from the outside world heat into it. I have to hold a Bunsen burner under it for a while. I have to aim a magnifying glass at it with the sun shining on it. I have to do something from the outside world to aim to change its temperature. In isolation, a block of copper will not increase in temperature, will not decrease in temperature. You're saying that that would only take place if there was no freely floating electron cloud of valence electrons around all of those copper molecules. You're saying that that could only take place if they're not moving. I know that they're moving because my radiometer can measure it. I know that they're moving, but I think their movement is very similar to two air molecules encountering each other. They bounce off each other, they do not contact, they lose no energy on every one of those bounces. Until those air molecules are moved at a very high supersonic velocity, they do not touch. The air molecules in the front of that meteor that's encountering the Earth's atmosphere, it experiences heating because of the compression of that shock wave in the front, not because the air molecules are touching the meteor. A hell of a lot of these mechanisms are lossless mechanisms because of the electrostatic charge repulsion when two things encounter each other and get repelled by electrostatic charge, there is no loss mechanism there. Momentum can be conveyed, but that's not a lossy mechanism. Over to you, Glenn, K2RIW.
Now is the time for my comment.
Well, what I see actually happening, Vic, is this. If you have copper and you're going to excite it to an energy level, you have to put heat into it until basically that device reaches an equilibrium across it so that it's at a temperature, so that everything is equal across it. But now the issue is you still have the valent electrons moving from one electron, one atom to the next. Now you've raised it to this temperature level, and you've completely isolated it now. So nothing can either come in or go out, but the electrons are still moving at this point in time. That's energy. It's moving. Now, yes, it's at a temperature. Now, you found this way to isolate it in a calorimeter so that no energy can come in or out, no radiation, nothing. When that body, when all of those electrons have moved or jumped from each valence shell to the next, and it reaches the outer part of that body, and there's no other place for them to go, they've jumped from one to the other, back and forth, back and forth. They keep on, one leaves one valence shell, ticks into the next one, and it continues to do this. And you've stopped it so that no radiation can get out, nothing else. There's only one of the possibility that could happen, is the temperature would have to increase. EC2, QIQ.
Question, Dick?
Me also.
Okay, with what Glenn just said, you agree or disagree, Wes, and I'm going to go over to John. Go ahead, Wes.
Well, first, I believe we're going over and over the same subject. At first, what Glenn said, we should realize what is going up, what is going down, and what are we dealing at a particular time, point in time. At first, before everything happened, we have a static electric and magnetic field that cannot be expressed, let's say, by the sine wave, but non-changing, but both the electric and magnetic fields have a direction. The reason that I pointed the magnetic field is because nothing is going on. And you completely try to, omit that factor. Whenever we have a moving electron, we have a magnetic field. So only because we have defined them as having one, let me jump. So let's say, if I put a positive test charge in the electric field and it goes away from the source, then I know the direction of the field, which we're dealing with the vectors also, that is pointing away from the source. The field itself has no interesting direction, so we just put one of there, let's say, to help us to see what's going on. So also the field is near positive or near negative. It is simply there. A positive particle puts out the same field that a negative one does, except that the particles will react differently to the field depending on whether the particle is positive or negative, because the directions are different. So the magnetic and electric field in that molecular structure are perpendicular to each structure. Are there because there is simply how it works. The changing electric field produces a magnetic field that is at right angle to it. Now, that one is actually the force, the vectoral momentum that is actually adding to the action. I'm trying to express myself as clear as I can. Answer it.
If you believe in the Boltzmann equation, or is it the Nyquist, KTV, Boltzmann's constant times temperature times bandwidth tells you exactly how much voltage or current or power is existing in something that is above absolute zero in temperature. T in degrees Kelvin, bandwidth in hertz, Boltzmann constant in its units, and once you know the temperature of the substance, you know how much random motion of the electrons it has. Glenn keeps saying, I have to add energy to the copper in order for these valence electrons to move. I say no. In the world that Glenn and I live in, where the majority of everything around us at 40 degrees north latitude averages something in the vicinity of 290 degrees Kelvin. Everything starts off at that temperature. I don't have to heat it up. I don't have to cool it off. It starts off at that temperature, and I begin the experiment. I take this 14 grams of copper, put this in this nearly ideal calorimeter. Both John VDH and I are saying that I can confirm that the electrons are moving around, obeying the Boltzmann equation, KTV, by periodically connecting my radiometer to those two terminals, and I'll measure the random motion, but I disconnect that real fast because I'm afraid it's a contaminant of the system, and I can make the measurement of its temperature, I can make the measurement of its KTV number, I can make that measurement today or a year from now, and I'll get the exact same number. That's leading me to believe the mechanism by which the electrons move from one molecule, one atom area to the next is a lossless mechanism in toto. Yes, microscopically, one atom at a time goes a little bit down in energy when that electron leaves, and it comes back up in energy when the next electron hops back into that shell again.
Dick, how about if everything is happening because of electrostatic repulsional attraction and the magnetic influence between the atoms?
Yeah, the whole atom becomes positively charged when that electron leaves. And that gives him an attraction to the next electron that wants to hop into that position, and he goes back to neutral. So he's hopping back and forth between neutral and slightly positively charged by one electron's worth, and he's doing that a zillion times per second. Each individual copper atom is doing that. But in toto, there is no energy loss, there is no energy gain from that process, because very similar to the two air molecules encountering each other, they get electrostatically repulsed. They look like they're bouncing, but they never really touch. There is no loss mechanism.
If one thing that is of question with what Glenn said. He says that when the electrons get close to each other, then they exchange the energy. Well, they have the same charge. They could not be, because of that, they have the same charge. So it's not happening this way. Electrostatic cannot be on the plate of the capacitor 30% on the left-hand side and 70% on the right-hand side. It's even. It's 50-50. It's always the same. So my understanding of that...
The rotation is what determines the energy. It's the rotation of one, and the rotation in the direction, which is sometimes referred to as spin, that determines the charge transfer, KC2, QIQ.
Are you spinning an electron, or you're spinning the molecule? What are you spinning?
Electron.
Well, guys, how about if we do just use the example? The electron goes to another atom. Now, one atom has less of the electrons; the other one has more of them. In liquid, is being called cations and anions. Now we have a difference in charges. Now we have a transfer of the energy into exchange.
But in total, each individual molecule is continuously gaining and losing, but the total aggregate energy of the 14 grams of copper, in my example, is not getting hotter, is not getting colder, is not getting more energy, is not getting less energy. KC2WGB, I know you wanted to make a comment on all this. John, do you believe the copper molecule, the 14 grams of copper in my calorimeter will heat up, will cool down, or will stay the same? Over to you, John.
Well, basically, you covered what I was going to say, Dick. I think it would remain the same. If we had a perfectly insulated room, and those air molecules are meeting at a certain speed and passing off this kinetic energy, if we elevated the room temperature and then took away that elevating element, would it keep rising? So I think the same thing. I think it would stay exactly the same.
Well, I believe that matter, when it's rarefied, and the spacing between the atoms will become bigger, then we can go close to equilibrium and to exia.
Yeah, when it comes to thermal inertia, what John was talking about is that I'm using a gas stove, I'm pouring flame at the bottom of my pot of water, I'm watching the thermometer go up, I'm looking at the rate of change of degrees centigrade or degrees Fahrenheit per minute. there are a large number of people who believe that if I instantaneously turn off the flame and move the pot away so it's not touching the hot chunk of steel that it was resting on, there are a significant number of people who believe the temperature of the water will continue to rise, assuming there isn't a huge amount of thickness of the steel or whatever it is of the pot itself. Assume that there's equipotential from inside to outside of the metal of the pot. Well, the water, because the water was trained to start moving up at 5 degrees per minute, will it continue to move up at 5 degrees per minute and then slow down? The answer is no. It stops rising immediately. There is no thermal inertia. Yeah, there is specific heat. The specific heat tells you the summation of all the energy you put into the system by that flame over the last 10 minutes, so to speak, but you stop putting in energy, and it stops changing in thermal energy, or any other kind of energy, I think. So, as I see it, Glenn, you've got three guys, John in Staten Island, I'm losing it, and Dick, you've got three guys who feel one way, and Glenn, and I'm pretty sure Wesley feels that way too, and you had Glenn on the other side of the fence. So right now, if we were foolish enough to use majority logic, you might lose in this particular court of law, Glenn. KCQ QIQ.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Yeah, Glenn, before you go.
Actually, Dick, I'm not looking to win, but I'm just going to just reiterate something here, because you can look this up during the week. Look at a Boltzmann distribution, and look at the exponential for E2 minus E1 over KT, or your N2 over N1 ratio, and look at what you need, what the requirement at the, basically at your, let's call this the atomic level, what would be required, and then come back to me next week and tell me if you still believe that valence electrons in thermodynamics are actually exchanging from one valence shell to the next in a true thermal equilibrium. In other words, where a body of atoms is no longer going up or down in temperature, then tell me again that the valence electrons are jumping around from one electron shell to the next. KC2, QIQ.
Before you guys go, I tend to agree with Dick in this area. One thing in atomic structure in that I would like to point, which we didn't really talk, we have a certain perpendicularity. If the electric field and magnetic field are tridimensional, then wouldn't their forces be exerted in tridimension? Those, how can the forces or the magnetic and electric fields be perpendicular if vectors representing force would be the infinite plane? By that token, I could say that the energy exchange between electron and electron, just because of the motion, unlikely is taking a place. It must be a difference of charge.
VDH with a comment? I got to go back to Glenn for a minute. Glenn, I think you're slowly saying that if I really have a chunk of copper in isolation, you're slowly admitting that it probably will not increase or decrease in temperature. Because the temperature does not increase or decrease, you are telling me that the valence electrons on the outside of each copper atom are not moving from atom to atom. That's what I think you're saying. You're saying that that is proof positive that they are not moving because the temperature would not, in isolation, increase or decrease. Have I misquoted you on that one, Glenn?
Somewhat, because I don't believe that that situation can exist, is what I'm trying to tell you, is that if you have a piece of copper and you do something to it and you try to insulate it, can you keep the temperature constant? I think you possibly could, but what I'm saying is that there is some energy either entering or leaving to do so. In other words, as long as the valence electrons are moving from one valence shell to the next, there's some exchange of energy somewhere in a body. In other words, you just can't have a fixed chunk of copper in space, isolated or whatever it is, at a fixed temperature with veiled electron movement and no temperature change from atom to atom. It does not equate. KC2 QIQ.
Okay, we've said it to each other a number of times. We know where we stand. VDH, where do you stand?
Okay, let me ask this question. Isn't it somebody's law, I forget now who, but saying that electrons in a neutral atom are orbiting, have orbitals, but do not radiate. So when they're in their valence bands, even though they are moving in some orbital or orbital pattern, they do not radiate. When they're raised up into the conduction band, again, they absorb a specific amount of energy to go from the valence band to the conduction band. And they only radiate again when they drop down from the conduction band into the valence band. But in either one of those cases, there is no radiation. I thought that was somebody's law. I forget who, but maybe you can remember that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. Now, the outer valence electron is the only one that's going to be moving in this chunk of copper we're talking about. And so some energy is required to make that electron leave copper atom number 5. But very rapidly, he's going to be replaced by some other electron. So a little bit of energy is going up and back down, but the conglomerate is zero. You could say the energy gained by atom number 5 was lost by atom number 6, was gained by atom number 7, and so on, so that the whole thing can stay in balance, even though electrons are hopping around in my picture. Glenn is convinced that any hopping of the electrons is a loss mechanism, that the whole unit of copper would be going down in temperature if you didn't continuously supply energy from the outside world in order to allow this event to continue. Am I misquoting you on that one, Glenn?
Well, Glenn is first...
Actually, yes, but I'll let Wesley go.
Quantize, especially in hard hydrogen. And the only way that electron can change its energy is by jumping between levels of emitting light. So once electron sits in the quantum state of the atom, the lowest energy state, it can't go down anymore because of the quantum effect.
Okay, what I was saying is basically that when you have an electron in a valence shell, we're not talking about any energy state changes from one energy. We're just strictly talking about valence. We're not going to the other orbitals at this point. So we have electrons that are free in this valence shell, and we're suggesting that they are going from atom to atom in an increased temperature environment. And what I'm pointing out here is that in order for that to take place, it's either energy has to be coming in and increasing the amount of energy coming into that body of copper to allow that valence number of electrons to increase, or it's got to be cooling down, and the number of valence shells moving from basically atom to atom is decreasing. That's what I'm saying. KC2QIQ.
If I decide to study 10 of the copper atoms, and 5 of them have an electron that left, and 5 of them have an electron that came back, because previously something had left, can those 10 atoms looked at together, can the total energy change in that example I just gave be zero? I wonder if you agree or disagree, Glenn.
No, because each one is a velocity. It's an orbit. Think of them as planets. But on a microscopic level, okay, the atomic level. Look at each electron as a little planet. If you've got a planet and its momentum and energy is all maintained because it's in an orbit, whatever initial velocity was in it is in it, and it's, as long as it stays in that orbit, okay, it's basically gonna stay on that orbit. Now all of a sudden you create some external energy. I'm gonna call this energy charge, and you're going to apply it to this atom, and you're gonna bump that valence because it can't maintain that orbit anymore. It can't stay there because you've exceeded, you've reached a saturation point. You pushed it out. So now it's looking for a new home. So that was energy to push it out. Now there's another area on the other side that has got an opposite charge, and it draws it in. Just because it's negative and pulling it in is energy as much as pushing it out. So just because the charge is positive on one side and negative on the other, Both are loss. KC2, QIQ.
Nick, what was the question about the radiation? That the charge density function doesn't change of the electron with time, because it's spread out over the orbit, so the radiation occurs only as the charge density changes. That's what I believe.
And by the way, when you usually when you used a hydrogen atom before, in the case of a hydrogen atom, the single electron is so close to that nucleus, there's a very tight binding there, which is not a good example compared to a copper atom, where that outer valence electron is extremely loose by comparison. Now, I've got three questions to ask to you, Glenn. Three questions. Question number one, I start off with let me pick a number, a 30-pound block of solid copper. I open up the door of this well, is very good. Assume I started off with a copper block at room temperature. Assume the room is remaining at room temperature. And I've got a thermometer. I'm using one of these optical thermometers, so I'm not even touching this copper block. And I measure the copper block as I put it in the oven, and I come back a day later. Could the copper block be at the exact same temperature that I started off the previous day? That's question number one. Over to you, Glenn.
Yes, it can.
Because the temperature of the copper block in this well-insulated oven did not change, does that mean, now tell me what that means as far as what are the valence electrons on that copper block at the molecular, at the atomic level, what are the valence electrons doing? Is every single valence electron staying locked to that particular copper atom that he was married to, and there are no intermarriages taking place? Is that what you're saying, Glenn?
Absolutely not. They are in complete motion.
Describe that motion.
Because of the temperature that they're at, the energy level that each individual copper atom is at is going to be exchanging electrons from one valence shell to the next. It'll be mounting. And like you said, you would actually be able to measure the radiation coming off of that block, and basically you can still maintain that temperature for a very, very long period of time. KC2, QIQ.
If energy is coming off the block, isn't it eventually going to cool down?
The amount of surface energy, I think that it would be thousands of years, Dick. It'd be a very, very long period of time. I'd have to look at that. I mean, especially when you're talking about something like 30 pounds of copper or something like that. It'd be an extremely long period of time. But yes, eventually, it is theoretically cooling down at a very, very small atomic level. KC2, QIQ.
If I start off with a small enough chunk of copper, and I wait long enough, because these electrons in the outer valence shell are moving, and you said they are moving, if I start off with a small enough chunk of copper before I put it in that oven, and I wait long enough, will it get colder?
Absolutely.
How cold will it get?
Then the difference in charge to the electrical number, E2 minus E1 over KT. Basically, if you look at the amount of charge energy in each level and you represent it to a temperature to the total mass, in other words, you have an atomic weight, you have the amount of electrical energy of each electron shell as it moves. So you subtract that from 1 over the total mass, and that's delta T, KC2, QIQ.
I've got this very small sample of copper in the middle of this very big oven that's very well insulated. You're telling me it's going to get colder because of the energy lost by that mechanism you're describing. If I wait long enough, will that chunk of copper go to 0 degrees Kelvin?
It will come to, I guess, whatever the equalized temperature is on the outside. In other words, eventually all items eventually come to, if you look at, if you allow something long enough, or whatever the temperature of deep space is, or whatever room temperature, whatever everything else around it is, it will come to the equilibrium of everything else around it. KC2, QIQ.
If the oven is insulated well enough, it doesn't know what the outside room temperature is.
Okay, what's the material that the stove is made of? It has electrons. It has an exchange. What I'm trying to point out here, Dick, is that there's no such thing as a perfectly insulated calorimeter or whatever we're calling this here. That there is always some leakage. And when we're talking about electrons in a valence shell, the amount of energy lost from one item to the next is in a thermal state is a very, very small amount of energy. It's not a tremendous amount of energy, but it is definitely energy. KC2QIQ.
A real good thermos bottle, a Dewar, has an inner chamber and an outer chamber, and between the two is an extremely hard vacuum. That's the closest you and I can get to nothing. So therefore, the inner chamber of my Dewar, I got a real good, large Dewar, the inner chamber and the outer chamber are thermally isolated as best I can get. You're telling me that, except for the small amount of energy that flows across that vacuum, that the copper will continuously cool itself off, and if I wait long enough, you're implying it will go to 0 degrees Kelvin because of the random motion of those valence electrons. That's what I think you're telling me, Glenn. Go ahead.
In like millions of years, yeah, eventually everything will, provided there's no new energy from the outside that gets added to it.
Okay, if I've waited millions of years, I can watch it go to 0 degrees Kelvin. But if I've got a good thermometer, and there are thermometers that can measure microkelvins, if I wait a week, will I see the thermometer move a microkelvin because of the cloud of electrons that are doing their thing? Over to you, Glenn.
It would depend on the volume, the mass, and the number of electrons involved. I mean, that's, you know, I'm saying if you look at the, it's like a Boltzmann distribution and apply it to an atom, you can actually, and just take a couple of atoms and move the electrons back and forth, take the total atomic mass, and look at the delta T. That's all that I'm saying. But it's a small number. It's not, when you talk about thermal numbers of the electrons to the total temperature versus their mass, it's tiny. But yes, it does exist.
Okay, let's jump away from the copper for a minute and go back to air. I've got this beautiful container of 1 liter of air. And I know, because the air is at room temperature at the beginning of the experiment, that those air molecules, on average, have a speed, not velocity, speed of 500 meters per second. They have bounced, and the mean free path is 63 nanoseconds. If I use 500 meters per second and 63 nanoseconds, on average, a particular air molecule is encountering another air molecule. I don't know the exact number, but maybe it's 1 billion times per second. So 1 billion times per second, my particular red air molecule that I'm studying encounters another air molecule. 1 billion times per second. Is that a lossy mechanism? If I wait long enough, will that 1 liter of air get colder? Over to you, Glenn.
Well, there's a difference of things going on here. I mean, all things eventually, with no external energy, will eventually slow down, and, you know, there's entropy involved in this. And you can look at entropy at the atomic level and do there again the same thing. Although the rules here are a little bit different for gases versus solids. So when you look at the solids, I believe the ratio of this of the air will actually move, will change temperature quicker. Is that right? I think in terms of cooling down, I got to think about that one for a minute. But it is different though for solid versus natural gases, Dick, or just gases in general. KC2QIQ. But yeah, no, it does change.
Picked up the wrong mic. By the way, the answer turns out to be 8 billion times per second. 8 billion times per second, an air molecule is encountering another air molecule in room temperature environment on average. You believe that's a lossy mechanism. So in other words, I think you're telling me that if I put this 1 liter container of air into a well-insulated chamber and I measure the temperature, I will watch the temperature decrease. Now, because as it decreases some significant amount, eventually the outside world is going to start pouring heat into it because there's a difference in temperature. But on the way there, if I've got a good thermometer that can measure microkelvins, will I see the parcel of air getting colder because those air molecules are encountering each other. Over to you, Glenn.
In your lifetime, I don't think so, because I think if you look at the number of electrons that you're comparing to the number of the volume of that air, I don't think in yours or, you know, a million years worth, you'd be able to see that temperature difference.
The gram molecular weight of air is roughly 29. So 29 grams of air, which is a...
what's the weight of an electron?
22.4 liters of air is 1 gram molecular chunk of air, 29 grams of air. It's got Avogadro's number of air molecules. So Avogadro's number, 10 to the 23 power. They're all bouncing around and hitting each other. And you're saying the bounce is a lossy mechanism. I say it's not. You say that the air is going to get colder. And if it was in sufficient isolation, sufficiently insulated, you're saying it would go toward 0 degrees Kelvin.
Well, keep in mind, this is a gas. This is a gas equation. This isn't a solid anymore. And you're going to have some mobility of your air molecule, not electrons. It was, initially, we were talking about solid, where there was no copper moving around here. This was a solid, and we were strictly talking about electrons. Now we're talking about the same relationship of electrons inside a mobile molecule, in which they can actually move around. So there's a certain amount of the temperature motion that's associated to a gas. Okay, and then now we're well beyond that, because we're going deep inside the molecule and looking at the atomic electron, and we're saying, now does the electron have an effect? Yes, it does, because it has a mass on its own, and it has basically a charge coefficient, and if all of a sudden at that point in time, it's no longer, and I have to understand, inside your gas, you're talking about a gas that has valence electrons in it. So yes, they will slow down. The valence ones will.
Quick question.
You're saying that this is a different experiment, Glenn. I say it's the same experiment. Those air molecules encounter each other, bounce off each other because of electrostatic repulsion of the outer string of electrons on each individual air molecule. The electrostatic repulsion is the mechanism by which they bounce. At the molecular level of copper, the individual electrons are bouncing off each other by electrostatic repulsion. They never touch. And there's also some attraction going on because they've left a particular air molecule, air atom, and left it positive temporarily, but eventually it gets replaced.
Yeah, agreed, Dick. The repulsion part shell keeps on hopping from one atom to the next.
R, C, 2, N, repeater, controller, V, 5.2846. Clock not set, clock not set, ready. Welcome to the W. The time is 12:46 a.m. Monday, March 19, 2012.
K2IO and Y2H Mobile.
Good morning. The time is 12:56 a.m. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL Repeater System.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater System. Code number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater System. Node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link active.
The time is 1:10 a.m. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater. Good morning. Set tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. The time is 2:59 a.m. W2VL Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Good morning. The time is 3:10 a.m.
Good morning.